channeling that inner podcast sex voice. All right, welcome back to Castle Comps, episode 112. Today, we got Zach, the man that made the best Tarkov IMS video I think I've ever seen. Zach, how are you doing today?
Doing great. How are you?
You know, it's the weekend. I am caffeinated. I just took a bong hit. Today's episode is brought to you by Purple Haze. Thank you so much, local weed shop. So I'm doing pretty fucking good, Zach. How are you doing today on this wonderful Sunday, the Lord's Day?
I'm doing good, dude. You know, I didn't know about the time zone change or whatever.
Oh, like, yeah, the hour losing bullshit.
Yeah, I hate it. I don't get why we even do that. Like,
well, it's like it was for like farmers or some shit. And then they're like, oh, kids don't want to walk to school when it's dark. So they changed it now. But I don't really see too much of a need for it. I know some states don't even do it. Like Arizona just says, fuck it. And they don't do it at all. And they're technically, you know, PST. So, I mean, it kind of fucks them up, I guess. But I mean, if they can live with it, why can't we? And then they vote for it in Congress to like eliminate it, but then just never did it. I don't know.
It's weird. Wait, so they're a whole hour behind now, even though.
I'm not sure exactly how it works. I just know that they don't engage.
That's too complicated. Like, it should just be like, why we shouldn't have that at all.
No, I am not a fan of it. You know what? I'm a fan of things that are tangible. Like, I was a fan of snow in Tarkov and the elimination of rain. Yes, and now, dude, that the snow is gone, I know the rain's going to come back. And, you know, I would much rather be in a raid with a cheater or be in a raid with a D2 rat than I would be in a raid with rain. I'm just going to say that right now.
I'm happy the rain is gone. That's one of the best things right now, honestly. But I miss the snow. I think the snow was definitely better than what it currently is, like with just no snow, out. You know, everyone's dying to bushes.
My favorite thing about the snow was that they didn't announce it. And then every single big streamer and content creator, I actually got to see what they looked like as a child on Christmas, because they just started falling. Like, what is this? What is this magic? Like, you finally got to see the Tarkov community happy and excited without any negativity.
Exactly, it was
unbridled joy for once.
That was one of the best moments ever. Like, I was in the gym scrolling Twitter, and I'm not even joking. Like, I saw 12 videos in a row of content creators just posting the reaction to the snow. And it was just like, it was a miracle moment, bro. It was probably like one of the coolest things, because it was out of nowhere. And it was just the way it transitioned to the snow is very unique.
Now, did you rush home from the gym when you saw that? Be like, I got to see this shit. Or did you finish your workout?
I had to finish the workout, dude.
I wasn't sure if you had like a Charlie Bucket, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory moment. He's like, run home, Zach, and don't stop until you get there kind of moment when you saw the snow.
Bro, it was like, I mean, it was, I was able to live that moment through the videos, I will say.
Right. You know? See, it's rare when you get a moment that takes people who have like 8,000 hours, 5,000 hours in a game. It's rare when you get a moment that takes the entire community by surprise. So that was fun to see. So speaking of gaming, what has been your surprise game of the year so far? Like, I know we're not very deep into this year. It's only March, but we've had some interesting drops, such as Helldivers and such. Do you have a game that has been on your radar for that? Or have you not really been in any other game other than Tarkov?
Honestly, I haven't really been in any other game but Tarkov, just because I like the routine of just like streaming it all the time. Right. But I've also like wanted to go back to some older games, like, you know, old stuff on my DS, kind of like emulator games, a lot of Nintendo games that are just kind of nostalgic. But I have seen the new like Helldivers and there's a ton of other games that have come out this year. Are there any games you're interested in?
You know, I haven't played PAL World yet. I'm interested in PAL World. I just bought Helldivers a few days ago, and I love it. I think it's great. There's a few things that I have on my radar that are indie games. I'm not going to shout them out yet because I got burned last time. I was like heavy into this indie game, and then it dropped, and it was just so disappointing. It was so disappointing. It wasn't the day before that, like, you know, whatever the fucking scam one was last year. It wasn't that one. It was a different one.
So yes. That's my problem with modern games now is they promise this whole product. This is why it's like a trust issue thing now.
Right.
They promise this, you know, they hype it up. They get these trailers going.
Video games are why I have trust issues.
Exactly. They put you on the edge of your seat and then it ends up coming out. Everyone buys in, pre-orders, and it just completely flops. And my experience,
they nickel and dime you, like, for the full product that you were promised, which is hated.
Exactly, dude. The last mistake I made that broke my trust was Battlefield 2042.
That was a big one for me too. I liked the Battlefields until that.
Yeah, it was super hyped up, and I pre-ordered it. I played the beta. And the beta should have been the first indicator. Like, right. The lesson I learned is just never pre-order a game, no matter what.
Especially
just moving forward. Exactly.
See, like, the thing I absolutely despise about the situation with the day after, whatever the fuck it's called, is they had paid reviews by IGN. And, like, you know, IGN's big. Like, back in the day, Game Informer for us, you know, when you buy your subscription to GameStop, you get those fucking magazines in the mail and it would tell you about all the upcoming games and it would give you reviews and shit. Like, IGN's pretty much taken that role in a digital sense. So people use that as a barometer for gaming. And it's clear looking back that they never played the game, that they were just getting paid to write fluff pieces about said game. And now said game is apparently fraudulent. A lot of people are making that game. A lot of intellectual properties were ripped off and a lot of art stolen, which has been proven. So it's kind of crazy that something that has so much like leeway and clout in the gaming sphere is so easily like fooled and negated. It kind of makes pre-ordering or taking any real source other than like, you know, ground root shit that's not making any money, like actually taking them seriously, which is kind of a bummer.
Yeah, no, that's what I feel. I feel like something has to change in the gaming industry just in order to like ensure that the consumer isn't just getting scammed, essentially. Like, there's so many problems, stolen artwork, right, like you said, just like poor gameplay loop, just bad developers, like.
And then you get bad actors from companies we have trusted forever, like Nintendo. Nintendo is very creator unfriendly. They don't like people who use emulators. They don't like Power World. They don't like people who take their product and make things out of it, which is funny because you think they would lean into that. Be like, oh, they're promoting our product on a larger scale. But no. And Nintendo's like the OG for so many of us. I know my first system was an NES. So it's kind of funny how like my childhood like favorite company is becoming like a big fat asshole.
Yeah, I was looking recently. They pressed charges against another emulator. Like, they do this regularly. They have this crazy legal team and anything. Yeah, Power World, I remember hearing something about that. And emulators, it's just like they don't want you reliving their games, pretty much.
Right. Well, not without a price. And it's so funny because like they've kind of been phoning stuff in. Like, their last Pokemon open world game, Power World did it better than them. Okay, take away the guns, which just pretend Power World didn't have that guns aspect. It's as an open world, find a like Pokemon type creature type of game. They did way better than the last Pokemon game that was put out. So it's funny how these indie studios are kind of pushing the bigger boys to be better. Like, we saw it with BattleBit. We're seeing it with Power World. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of other games right off the cuff. I just don't have the mental fortitude because I just took four bong hits to name all of them. But I know you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly, dude. Like, I've seen Power World gameplay and it looks like, to me, it looked like an open world Pokemon game. I was like, bro, I should have given that a try, because growing up, I was a big Pokemon guy as well. Like, my first, I'm trying to think of my evolution. I had an N64 and I'm only 20 years old. So this thing came out before I was born. I played Mario 64 on it.
Oh,
pretty sure they had some sort of Pokemon game on it, maybe. But Yeah, I went through,
I think the first Pokemon game for the N64 was Pokemon Snap. Are you familiar with Pokemon Snap?
I didn't play it, but it sounds familiar.
It was like a weird game where it was like you were like a photographer and they'd put you in this little like amusement park car thing and you would just like go through the land and you could like throw food or like balls at them to annoy them or and take pictures and you can like cause evolutions and you can like cause fights and stuff. So it was like it was an interesting game. Definitely I've never played a game quite like that. But then the coolest thing that they brought was a stadium, Pokemon Stadium, and they had this thing that would connect to the bottom of the N64 controller where you could take your Game Boy cartridge, which was where Pokemon started for me gaming, was the Game Boy brick green one, because I'm an old 35-year-old man, Pokemon Blue, and you could put your cartridge into that adapter in the controller and you could play with your Pokemon from the Game Boy into Stadium. That was the biggest like evolution thing for me when I was like playing that. That was crazy.
I missed out on that.
Gaming has definitely come a long way. I'll say that.
Yeah. Dude, like some of the other games, I mean, I think I only remember three games that I played. I played Smash on the N64. That game was classic. So fun.
So
Tony Hawk Pro Skater. That one was sick. I can never figure out how to save my progress, though. So, you know,
do you remember the Super Smash Brothers commercials, or were you too young for those?
Too young.
So, OK, you know, when you go to Disneyland and you see the characters dressed up like there's a dude in a big Mickey Mouse costume and it's like kind of awkward.
Yeah.
So the commercials, they had every single character from Smash in like their like Disneyland like mascot uniform, like in a field skipping to that song. So happy together. And then they start beating the shit out of each other.
Dude, I think I've seen that on YouTube. I think I've seen those because those commercials are so like weird, bro. Like,
I don't see many commercials for video games, especially commercials involving live action people. But this one was fucking great, dude. This one was great. I'll send it to you after this.
Yeah. Definitely send it to me. I want to take a look.
Oh, man. So moving into current gaming. So you're a PC gamer. Do you go into the console world, or do you not even dip a toe in the console world anymore?
I don't dip a toe in it anymore, but I have respect for it because just like most people, I started playing console, you know, like N64 to Wii. I had a DS, DSi, 3DS, all those. And then what else? Xbox, PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, and then PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One. PlayStation 5. My dad's a big console gamer, so he definitely got me into gaming, especially first person shooters, because he wouldn't let me play first person shooter games until I was like much older. So he would be playing them, not even letting me watch, and I was like, it just made me want to get into them a lot more. So eventually he let me start playing like FPS games on the Xbox. Halo, right. Call of Duty, and then I was just like, yeah, it was my thing. And then
God, I loved Halo. That was such a great game series. Like, yeah, it was weird growing up because they were going from gaming that was like very pixelated, like 8-bit style art, and then stuff from like, you know, Super Nintendo to like stuff that actually was like really crazy graphics. And that was when the time, like, you know, people were blaming current events at the time on shooter video games.
Yes,
people were blaming situations like Columbine or those dudes in the LA with the machine guns who fought the cops and like, you know, did the whole assault by like rifle ban. They blame video games for that shit. They blame Grand Theft Auto for that shit. They blame GoldenEye for that shit, like Perfect Dark for that. So it's funny how that still kind of has that ripple effect. People still blame video games for that kind of stuff. So I could totally see why a parent at that time would be hesitant to like get their game into an FPS because it's like, you know, and every like talking head on the news is saying it's going to make your kid into a crazy person. You know?
Yeah, no, that's exactly like what they thought. And it was right around that time as well. Like all the, you know, the MW2 No Russian scene. It was very like controversial. And I feel like now it's definitely not as big of a problem. Like a lot more people game. It's become more mainstream. And I don't know. I don't watch the news. I don't really watch TV at all because who does that?
You're not missing anything, my friend. You're not missing anything. It's funny because our talk about gaming sounded like a political thing. It's like, we can't trust the bigger guys. Like, it's kind of sounded like we were talking about politics earlier. But yeah, gaming is definitely, it's a trip. So with Tarkov in its current state, going from one spicy topic to another, I know there's a lot of people that have issues with the game, and that could be a litany of different things. Now, if you could change anything about the game in its current state, what would it be?
Dude, I feel like people are going to hate me for this, but I want to say movement. I think the movement system is a little bit overtuned, and it's not like it's like, I want to be clear, like I'm not super against inertia or the weight system. I think a lot of changes that BSG have done have been a step in the right direction, but I always feel like their new systems are a little bit overtuned. Like they kind of need to get in the middle and kind of compromise. So like when the weight system came out, that was very controversial. And then a year and a half later, the inertia came out, and it's the way that they interact with each other, the way they're kind of stacked on top, where you can feel your movement, your sensitivity even, completely different on just picking up a single item or stuff like that. And it kind of makes the game more inconsistent. It's like an inconvenience, really. Just, it sounds stupid, but just, you know, dropping your backpack before every fight if you have a couple items, or being unable to move or go to the extraction after, you know, just looting one or two players,
right? Especially, yeah, depending on how juiced said player is. Yeah, I totally get the movement thing, because there's a lot of people who played earlier iterations of the game where inertia wasn't a thing at all. And they're going from like being able to W key to like, you know, full stam to like stam and now this hard stop and what's in your bag. Which, you know, from a realism aspect, makes sense. But you know what? Let's be real. If we wanted to play realism games, we'd be playing Arma. Like, yeah. I don't understand the realism argument. Like, it's nice to have little bits of it, but it's like the way people use that in conversations about the game. It's like, oh, if you want to go that route, well, if I put a tourniquet on my leg, then my character can't walk. Like, you know, it's like, how far do you want to go into it? And the vaulting system, I love it, but oh my God, it's too sensitive. So...
Exactly.
You know, on customs, you know, the streamer room with the green screen, you know, that room directly to the left, those two little tiny windows that are like, they're not big at all. I was in that room with my friends and we heard something outside. So I jumped to like peek out that window because there's no good way to look out of it. And I jumped and my person vaulted through that little tiny window and I fell all the way to the ground right in front of two players. And I had two
fell out the
legs,
building.
Yeah, my guy went through the window. He literally crawled. I jumped just to see, and my guy for some reason did the vault animation, and I went through the fucking window.
Oh my goodness! Wait, so that's, do you have a clip of that? Do you have a clip of that?
My friend has a clip of that. I need to get it from
him. I didn't know you could, because those are like glass windows, right?
Yeah, that was the weirdest shit. I don't know what happened. I think it bugged out because my guy just went just died.
Did you kill him though, midair?
No, I was so shocked that I was falling. I was like, what is happening? Yeah, and then I landed, broke my legs, and I got immediately head tapped and they were laughing at me. So I'm kind of happy a big streamer didn't kill me, because then I'd be on, EFT, what the fuck?
EFT highlights. Yeah, I just imagine them watching you fall out the window from the top floor, and they're just like, this guy just fall out of the sky or something.
Speaking of EFT, what the fuck, those awesome, funny Tarkov clips and highlights and things like that. Have you had a favorite clip from that? Have you had a clip in that? Or is this something you haven't really like watched?
I watch those. I send in my clips every once in a while, but I can't even think of a favorite. Like a lot of the times I'll send in just like funny clips. Like I have this clip recently with the KS23 I posted on TikTok. Where I basically just
on factory.
I'm just like messing around with the KS23. I had another moment before that, which was I can't even remember, but there's a lot of good times. A lot of good clips that they post. But I will say that the EFT highlights, they aren't as interesting as the ones like 3 years ago. Like I see a lot of people submitting clips and it kind of like it's kind of just not even interesting. It's just like sometimes you don't even see anything cool happen. It's just like a single kill and it's just like from someone on Reddit. But
I think some of that actually has to do with the inertia changes, because I remember seeing a lot of people on Factory like W King and then hitting crazy drop shots off the stairs and things like that. Like dude. Thinking back, a lot of the really cool kill clips that I saw were from people who were fucking going hard. And now with inertia, it doesn't feel like people can, you know, operate at those levels as easily. I 100%. Guess it's just not as easy. And you kind of have to have the stars aligned. Like, you have to get a fight in the right time when your guy's like fully like, you know, hit his fucking inhaler so he doesn't have an asthma attack.
Fight, yeah, like exactly, that. Dude.
So we're using TikTok. How many people would you say have you gotten into your streams through TikTok? Would you say a significant amount, a moderate amount, or like kind of negligible? Like how many people have you think you've pulled from TikTok into your audience stream?
It's kind of weird. I would say a moderate amount. Like some people will definitely come in and they'll come in the chat and they'll say like, thank you for your TikTok guides or your clips. And, you know, I'll thank them for coming in and showing some support. And a lot of my current day mods actually did come from TikTok about a year ago when I was posting. Right. So it's not I don't think it's the best platform for like trying to get your audience from short form content into Twitch, which is the polar opposite. I think YouTube videos would be better because YouTube and Twitch are a little bit more similar, because short form content, a lot of people got TikTok brain. They just want to see video after video. Right. They'll forget your video even exists 5 minutes later, you know?
That is very true. But the nice thing is it does put that lore out there for the people who do like to watch, you know, long form stuff. And like you said, you got your mods from there. You got viewers from there. You got people who are probably still in the community from there. So the thing that I bring this up is because the threat of TikTok becoming banned on U.S. devices and becoming illegal, so to speak, because of what's happening currently. So my question to you is, are you going to pivot more towards YouTube? Are you going to start like delving more into the YouTube thing because of the potential loss of TikTok? Or is it going to be something that you're just going to just keep trucking the way you're doing and not worry about it?
For me, honestly, I'm going to keep trucking because this comes up every 6 months at this point or even less, like huge TikTok ban, this and that. And like, I understand the complications and the security concerns around TikTok, which is like a whole conversation.
That's a whole geopolitical thing that you guys.
It's insane. But right. I'm just gonna hope it's not gonna go down, because I think the chance of it happening is close to zero when you think about it. Because there hasn't. I don't know. I could be wrong. I don't really know too much politically about the U.S. government banning apps or websites.
Right. But it's kind of unprecedented. But it just kind of sucks because like, a lot of people are trying to make their bones off of streaming and content creation. And it's already a hard uphill trudge for the people who are like actually doing it and trying to do it. And then when you take a big source of eyeballs and viewership and things like that, and you just eliminate that, it just makes that trek even harder. So I'm just curious how certain people who are, you know, making content are going to pivot with this direction, because it's one of those things where in this industry you kind of have to evolve a lot. You got to get on the new thing. Mm-hmm. Like what happens when, like, you know, Mixer went down, or what happened when Kick entered the scene. And now with the apparently loss of like a TikTok potentially. So it's interesting to see how people are going to, you know, see that and maneuver, if maneuver at all, you know.
Yeah, if the ban was to go through, I would probably just pivot to Twitter. I've been posting on Twitter like just the same exact thing with TikTok, just the same file. And then the thing with YouTube is, in order for it to be a short, it has to be under a minute long. I think that's still the case. And usually my videos are like above a minute, so I'd have to cut down on the time, because in order to get paid on TikTok, your video has to be more than a minute. So if I want to like post on both platforms, I'd have to make two different versions of the video, which isn't too hard, but it It
it's extra shit to do, and like
yeah, you already think about it.
Streaming, you know? Finding your own clips, cutting those clips up, making them certain parameters. It becomes a fucking. It's a lot of little work, especially if it's not like your full time job. If this is something you're doing on the side, it becomes even like harder to do it.
Yeah,
there's all these extra shits to do, and I'm already working 40 hours a week. So it's definitely a lot. Especially for people who are like trying to like get started in this scene and stuff like that. So when you got started in the scene, if you can remember, what was the hardest barrier for you to overcome? Like, what was like that one intimidating thing? Was it just getting started? Was it like, you know, getting your name out there, or do you not remember?
Well, for me, it's kind of a weird situation because I wanted to do content creation when I was 12. So that's when I built my first PC, and I was playing console at the time, like Xbox 360 and PS4, and then I had an Elgato set up to my PC, and I wouldn't do streaming, but I made like cringe Call of Duty sniping videos and all that. Like, I feel like a lot of people my age went through that.
So you were trying to do the FaZe Clan thing with the 360s and whatnot?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I tried to do trick shotting and sniping in Call of Duty, but after 2016, I just like... Because Call of Duty was going in a bad direction. I played it for so many years, and it's so different now. But anyway, like I wanted to transition to PC gaming. So that's when I started playing Counter-Strike more, PUBG, and that transitioned to Rust, which then transitioned to Tarkov in the summer 2018.
Right. So you would say that COD was the gateway drug to Tarkov for you.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. And that's probably where a lot of my like beliefs come from. But honestly, a lot of my beliefs now with Tarkov kind of come from old Tarkov, because it was such a different game. It's almost uncomparable to how it is now.
That is true.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy a lot of the old aspects and a lot of the new aspects. But
do you ever watch the 12-year-old you content? Just to get an idea of how far you've come? Or is it one of those things where it's too cringy and you don't want to look at it?
It's kind of a mix of both, honestly. Like sometimes I'll look back at it and be like, I won't even think back on how I've evolved. I'll just be like, damn, that was me. That was me like 8 years ago, you know? And then, yeah, I mean, there's definitely been some progression. I had to unlist and private a lot of those videos because, you know, I've been on the same YouTube channel for a while now.
Right.
Same with TikTok. Like when I started TikTok, I was actually posting Rust content, and this was the beginning of 2021. Right. There was this big spike. I'm not sure how familiar you are with Rust, but there was this huge influx.
I dabble. I'm not like super knowledgeable, but I know a little bit.
Yeah. I have almost equal time on Tarkov and Rust. Like I've just been maining these two games. So. But there was a huge rise in like content creators playing, and they did, I think, Twitch drops for the first time. So kind of like what happened with Tarkov, where the game had Twitch drops in 2019 and the game just like 10x'd in a single month. With Rust, it like 3x'd, and I just started posting super stupid TikToks, and they were getting a lot of like views. It was very viral at the time. And then after a couple months of that, I stopped playing. I kind of stopped playing Rust. I stopped posting on the TikTok for like almost 2 years. And then that's when I started TikTok back up with, I think I had like 6,000 followers. This was January of last year. So I've just been posting short form content now for about 14 months and, you know, try to be consistent at least a couple times a week. It's gone pretty well.
Hell yeah. So when you were coming up in the Rust scene, did you have a favorite content creator or streamer that you idolized to a degree? Or was it one of those things where you just kind of dabbled in the content, or did you not really watch
I was
content,
super, which- I was super into the content, actually. So this is when I was started posting. I was posting a lot of like Rust videos on YouTube around this time, just PvP highlights. And yeah. I was super competitive with Rust, like at the top of the top. That game is so much more toxic than Tarkov. A lot of people think Tarkov is this toxic game, and the community definitely has changed over the last 5 years. But it's nothing like Call of Duty or Rust.
You can have a bad situation and then never see that person again in Raid. Whereas in Rust, it's just like that motherfucker's 10 feet away building a house across the street pretty much. It's like a constant rivalry until it wipes again.
Exactly, bro. And then it can get even crazier than that. Like you can stalk people on Rust. You can follow them from server to server. And this is a big problem with content creation on Rust, because I actually stream Rust. And like before Tarkov, well, actually, I started on Tarkov and then I did Rust and Tarkov interchangeably in the beginning of 2021. But people in Rust, what makes the content creation so hard is there's a website called Battle Metrics, and you can see what server they're on. You can see how many hours they have on the server, detailed graphs and everything, even if they have streamer mode. You can
just stream snipe somebody forever.
It was a big problem, dude. Yeah, no, there was Discords full of cheating stream snipers that would just ruin people's streams. It's insane.
I've seen some pretty crazy things about that game. Like the people who, like, they go naked in front of a big fucking fat base and they, like, wait till they're asleep. And then they try every single code from, like, 99999 until they get the fucking door code. Bro. Like, people are so committed to this game and, like, just looting in general. So I'm going to transition this to something else. So a lot of these games that the current are big right now have an aspect of gambling. Like, you know, like in Tarkov, anytime you hit a case, you're hoping for that big loot.
Once
you find a LEDX, you get that rush. Rust, same thing. Every time you loot a body, or every time you fucking break into a fortress and you loot someone's shit, there's always that high potential, that risk reward for that, like, jolt of, I found something crazy and expensive. And like even CSGO, you know, the fucking cases are R6, the skins, like there's that high risk, high reward. So do you think that games on Steam that like take money for you to open said cases, like a CSGO, do you think that's a form of gambling? And should those games have to hide that from their viewers on Twitch, or do you think it's something that they shouldn't care about? Because I know that's been a big topic with the gambling, especially with the whole creation of Kick and all that, and just legalization of sports betting and people losing a fuck ton of money across the board. It seems like our generation and the previous generation have been kind of brought up on that gambling aspect. So what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, man. Yeah, I would say gambling is definitely a big part of it all. Like, it started right when I started playing PC, was Counter-Strike. The gambling was huge. The third party sites, like there was CSGO Lounge, just like a bunch of old sites that were so massive that Steam had to threaten legal action just to try and shut them down.
The crazy thing that's sad is, like, it didn't even really hit the high point for CSGO. Like, people didn't really give a shit until the McSkillet situation, which is very sad. For those of you who don't know, McSkillet was a content creator in the CSGO field who was very prominent. He then opened up a gambling site that has lots of allegations of being rigged. I'm not going to get into the specifications of that because that's a whole other fucking podcast. And pretty much he made a shit ton of money and he kind of lost his shit. And then he drove his car into oncoming traffic and offed himself a mother and her child who was like a teenager, but still it's fucking terrible. So it's like, and then after that, things kind of went downhill for CSGO when it came to, like, you know, people attacking third party sites. And like, it already got kind of delegitimized when the iBuyPower guys like threw for money too. If you remember that, yeah, that was bad. So I hate that happened too, because that gave esports kind of a black cloud of like legitimacy in, like, you know, competitive scenes that adults could get into too. Like, I still love watching Counter-Strike competitive. I don't know if you ever got into that. Being a fan of FaZe, you probably have.
I was huge into Counter-Strike competitively. Right. And like watching games and stuff.
Now, did your favorite organization remain FaZe Clan, or did you branch out to other teams?
Well, I never really had like. I feel like FaZe and Call of Duty was a lot different than FaZe and Counter-Strike.
Oh, absolutely.
But I always kind of rooted for them just because, you know, they're that team. But mostly it was Cloud9 because they were US right at the time. And what other teams like Nautis or what is it called?
Nautis Pro. Yeah, there's a ton of them. Evil Geniuses, iBuyPower, who then got like disbanded because of the cheating situation. Yeah, Chaos. There's a bunch of orgs back in the day. Like, and it's sad to see some of them closing doors. And it is kind of cool that has kind of made its way into the Tarkov scene, or it's dipping its toe at least with Arena. Because like Arena, like when it first came out, you saw like people like Hyper Rat, people like Ragnar, they signed to teams like Team Solomed, TSM, for their Arena team. And I don't know if that's still a thing because I haven't seen any posts about big Arena competitions. Now, is Arena something that you've played, or is it something that you kind of like, you know, weren't about it?
I played the day one that it came out.
Same.
Arena is, it's such a cool, like, I like that they followed through and they actually made it. But there's like so many topics we could talk about because the game is definitely needing some changes, I feel like, for the longevity.
It's not esports ready.
Yeah, it's not esports ready. There's no real objective when you're just playing round by round. Like, you're just trying to shoot each other. It's not like Counter-Strike where there's strategy, there's utility, there's timing.
Plant the bomb.
Yeah, it's I don't really know what they were doing with Arena. Like, they wanted it to be an esports success, and it was, they invested a lot of money and time, like a lot of money, millions of dollars, just into the marketing of it. And I was seeing screenshots on Twitter from a couple weeks ago where the game had like 100 something viewers on Twitch at a single time.
Yeah. So, yeah, it went from like having more viewers than base game Tarkov to having low triple digits, which is crazy to think about in a very short amount of time, especially the hype that it had going into it. Like, they did a great job promoting it. They went to the, like, you know, the Twitch cons and stuff. They set up that big fucking set scene. They had the big people like currently in the scene playing LAN like tournaments. So it was so hyped. And now it's, I don't know, I kind of wish they would have gone that route of like making it more Counter-Strike-esque. Or even having it having training potential, or even tie-ins to the main game. Like, wouldn't that be a fun daily quest if they're like, hey, go win 4 Arena matches. Like, go play Arena. Or, like, something where it's like, instead of planting a bomb, like, fix this panel. Or, you know, something like that. Like, you have to do on Factory for that stupid task. Or for a training aspect. Like, let's say you just want to learn how to fight against Rashala or Killa. You could just put like you in an arena match versus an AI scab boss. And maybe you could have it be like Mortal Kombat, where you go against like one scav, two scavs, a raider, and then like have that build up to bosses. Like, how cool would that be? Like a Mortal Kombat ladder.
Dude, I haven't even thought about that, but that's a great idea. Like, the whole point that really sold me on Arena was there would be different, like there would be so much content and it would all be connected to the main game. And, you know, you were able to transfer rubles, like they promised so much. And then when it came out, the first wave, and there was less than half the features like that were actually working. It was just all grayed out. You know, it was like 3 game modes grayed out, maps are missing. And just like the progression system in itself was a nightmare, especially on the wipe zero, I guess you'd call it.
Or fuck, even if you win an arena match, they give you like a little arena medal that you could like exchange for something main game Tarkov. Be like, oh yeah, for 50 of these, you can have like, I don't know, a fucking items case or a docs case or, you know, something like that would be sick.
Yeah, that would be cool. Or if it was, if there was, like you said, like a training where you can practice against the bosses or you can actually receive something tangible from playing arena in the main game, that would definitely get more people playing arena. I don't know. There's a tons of other ideas, but I think and definitely the first thing was integration with the main game. That's definitely the most important thing. And that's kind of what I was expecting from the first wipe, I guess you'd call it. That was like a couple weeks ago. I don't think I haven't booted up the game since they did that update.
I played one match and I solo queued in. And as soon as we got in, the one guy on our team would just spawn kill us every time. I was like, well, super fun. Yeah, like we wouldn't even like, it was on bowl. And we wouldn't even get to like go into the fucking bowl. Because when the countdown's happening, one of our teammates was just fucking head tapping us.
Every single round, they don't get kicked
every
or anything?
Every single round. No.
What?
like you know in Counter-Strike, when you do enough team damage, it just boots you immediately from the game.
Yeah.
This, no. Dude was just fucking shooting us. And it's just like, why? Why are you playing arena like this? And then you see the videos of people who just shoot up straight into the sky like Jesus and then just pop everybody. Like, I don't know why you would cheat in that game, especially because there's no incentive for the main game. It's like, why would you do that? Who knows what's to come? Because they eliminated EOD because they want people to pay for arena. Because if you bought EOD, then apparently you have access to like extended content that comes out for the game. So I was told that's why they got rid of EOD editions. And with the implementation of this new stash increase with the, you know, DLCs, do you think that there are more DLCs on the horizon? Or do you think this was just them testing it out? Or what did you take on the stash DLC and potential spillage to Arena?
Yeah, so... The stash DLC, it all made sense when I think Rylo uploaded a video. I'm not sure if you saw it a couple weeks ago. It was like the financial report that killed Tarkov or something.
Yes.
And I think that
one is going to be almost as impactful as the wiggle that killed Tarkov. Mm-hmm. For anyone making Tarkov related content, just put blank that killed Tarkov and your shit's going to take off.
Yeah. But yeah, with the financial report video, I feel like it all kind of made sense. Like, I actually have known about the tax returns for a couple years. Like, I've been looking at them for BSD. They kind of like break even. You know, I don't really know exactly what's going on. But what I think about is I think Arena costed them a lot of money to market for sure. And yeah, like he did a calculation. Rylo did a calculation at all the money that would have been spent on the equipment and renting the room. They went to so many different events. It's like so many. They set up LAN. They let people play early. You know, they flew out a team to play.
It was pretty like on the lower scale too. He was giving them like if they got the best deal possible in some of those scenarios. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, God damn, they must owe a lot of money for all this.
Yeah. And that's where I feel like the microtransaction comes in with that timing and them removing EOD. But my opinion with the microtransactions, I really like it. Like, honestly, it's one of the best changes for me who's actually like privileged enough to afford the upgrade. It saves a lot of time. And right. That's the important thing, is not having to constantly, you know, sell multiple times per stream, which can kill the audience almost.
Yeah, it really can. It's like a free loot case when you're starting like a brand new wipe. Too, it's just like, oh, I can just grab everything. Like it opens up your game style, your play style, because yeah, the Tetris at the end of the raid is kind of debilitating at times. And it, like you said, it's an audience killer too. So from you and the way that you do your streams and you do your content, what have you found is the best way to fill that kind of dead gaming space where you're doing more boring, tedious things like stash organization or like building a gun for gunsmith? Like, what is your best way of entertaining your audience and maintaining your viewership during those times?
That's a good question. Honestly, those times are times that I use just to reset me mentally. Like, I'm at that point, I'm not too focused on the audience. I'm just playing music, kind of thinking, you know, what could go wrong? And I'm also selling items to give me that little dopamine I need to get into the next raid. So, right. You know, seeing just that rubles go up.
That hopium, yeah.
Yep, that hopium just pretty
next
much.
Next raid will be better. Next raid will be better.
Exactly, dude.
I'm going to find that vertex.
Yeah, dude. I couldn't find any of those. That's why that was a...
Yeah, Peacekeeper's an asshole. I think we can all agree on that. So with the content creation, people take different approaches when it comes to making content. Some people invent a whole character that they play the whole time they're on stream, like a Dr. Disrespect. Some people totally ignore their chat and just play the game like a Dane Cook, which is so weird that Dane Cook's a streamer.
Dane but, Cook. I don't.
So Dane Cook was like a big. He was a big he was a big comedian back in the day. I almost said big Canadian. No, he's a big comedian back in the day. Like he was in a bunch of movies, and he had like CDs back when comedians put out like CDs. And his whole thing was like the BK Lounge, and like he had a funny, he had like a really like funny thing. But he was kind of like a one note comedian. And now he streams on Twitch, and he doesn't acknowledge his chat at all. He just plays COD and ignores everyone else. And it's just so weird seeing a guy.
I know there's
who's like the height of like being a celebrity to like now he streams on Twitch for like 200 people and he doesn't talk to any of them. It's like,
it's funny, dude. I've seen a lot of celebrities, not a lot, but certain celebrities like Snoop Dogg, where they
Carl
just
Carl from The Walking Dead and Snoop Dogg.
He streams.
Yeah, he streams, and every time somebody comes in and calls him Coral, he bans them.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, what games does he play?
I'm trying to remember. He played it. He was like playing Minecraft when I saw him, and then I called him Coral and I got banned.
Bro, there's no way you got banned for that. That's crazy. But yeah, they just a lot of them don't interact with the chat. Like Snoop Dogg, he'll have his mic muted the whole stream. And you see these clips on TikTok where they take his game, they take his face cam and put it over gameplay where he's just like super dialed in playing NFL or something. And it's just, you know, those are hilarious, bro.
He rages too when he loses, which is so fucking funny to see. He's like, bro, you're a millionaire. What do you give a fuck? You lost a game of Madden. Your life's great, Snoop.
Yeah. I mean, I think gaming is just it's a great way for people to just kind of turn their brain off. Like it's a miracle.
So when you started streaming, what was your approach to like audience, like engagement? Were you like one of those guys who feels like they always have to be talking? Were you more mellow? Like, what was your approach to it? Or did you just try to like play it as natural as possible? Like, I'm just going to be me. Fuck it.
For me, I wanted the gameplay to just carry. That's kind of what I wanted. And then to just also have like cool conversations with the chat, just kind of like like normal streamer stuff. So, you know, sitting there and playing the game, having a fun time and trying to progress through the game, get cool content, cool kills, and, you know, definitely be interactive with chat, because I think, you know, that's one of the most important things when trying to grow on Twitch is just interaction. That's really what it is, interaction and personality.
What is the biggest thing that has changed from when you started this journey in content creation to now? Is it approach? Is it mindset? Is it ritual? You know, to the random shit people do before a stream. Like, what would you say is the biggest thing that's changed?
See, now, like, I'm trying to be a lot more routine with it, as well as, let's see, consistency is important. Routine, like, I always shower, I always eat before stream. There was something else that I completely forgot. I'm kind of blanking, but just honestly, just improvement over, you know, being more comfortable on stream. You know,
I think that's a hard part, is getting comfortable on camera, especially when you're streaming to a room with like less than 5 people in it, especially when the only chatters you're getting are the people who are trying to sell you fake art. you know when I'd be like, yes, hey, get a Discord link, and be like, no, fuck off, or hey, do you want to be famous, pay this fee and I'll get you
all viewers. The bots.
It's like, it definitely is hard to be in, like, you be in a positive mindset when you've been going at it for like, I don't know, 2 months, and it's like you're not seeing any traction. So was that kind of like what happened for you, and you just kept pushing and things started to like gain steam? Or is it one of those things where it was immediate? Like, how did it work for you? Like, what was your grind at the beginning like?
Let's see. In the beginning, it was a lot of it was on Rust training servers. I was kind of one of the first people to do this thing where you would basically – you'd play UKN, which is this battleground training server, and it had arenas you could join. And I would put my name, like ZekTTV on Twitch, and I would promo it in the chat and get people to join the arena. And then you'd get a full arena of like 15v15, and people would just come in the stream like wanting to kill you or kind of troll you like that. It was kind of that temporary like heightened viewership. But once you know, once you just like started in a different game mode or without all the people, it kind of, the viewership definitely like went down, but you know, you kind of go through those pumps and you definitely meet like some really cool people. And then for Tarkov, I would say it's completely different. There's nothing really like that you can do except put Twitch in your name, which just leads to you getting toxically stream sniped. It's something I did for a year or two, and then I changed my name to something that's without TTV, just like play on. I just do play on words. So I had the name Zekarino's Pizza, Zekiana, just like Zuckerberg, you know, stuff. So like people who are real can recognize you, and it's not just like people coming in there and calling out to their teammates and stream sniping all that, you know.
Yeah, that's the worst. How? Oh, 1 second. What? No, almost though. Down. Okay, you put her down. It's fine.
Audrey's still in the bathtub.
Okay, Audrey's in the tub. All right, cool. So going back. So yeah, like you were saying, you change your name so you don't get stream sniped headway through. And it's kind of funny how it seems like there's a growing trend in everyone in the Tarkov community using their little monogram or fake name, a name is something sexual in nature. It's so funny. Like every single, I got killed by Nikita's femboy, or I got killed by Rapper's chode, or like random shit like that. It's like awesome.
Dude, that's like, always the funniest, bro.
McFap. Like everyone has fun with it.
I love that you can have that, like. Oh, there's just so many aspects about Tarkov that are just like, just amazing.
Most welcoming toxic community I've ever been a part of.
It is, dude. Yeah, people have stupid names, but there's a lot of super funny names. It's definitely a lot of inappropriate ones too. But
yeah, but that's the one thing I do hate is you do get a lot more racial charged things, unfortunately, especially in arena. I don't know why the arena name detection seems to be weaker than the in-game detection for the main game.
Yeah, it's bad.
That's a whole different conversation. So moving back into the streamer thing, when it comes to the audience, have you ever had a weird parasocial relationship with a viewer where they think you're like way closer than you really are just because of like the person that you are on stream and their interactions with you? Like, have you ever had anyone think that you're like best friends or dating or anything weird like that?
Oh, no, the not that I know of.
Aspect of this can get crazy, as we've
seen. Yeah, no, I don't think I've had any kind of experience like that at all, fortunately, but I kind of enjoy at this point just being a smaller streamer and just having like a very small community that's active and like real. What's going around right now is there's a lot of streamers who are kind of not playing by the rules, and
kind of parasitic behavior, kind of like the follow for follow, or like, hey, I'm going to be your best friend until I get some clout and meet somebody bigger, and then I'm going to jump from them from you to them like a
fee. Yeah, exactly, dude. And even crazier is like, I don't know if you know about the Twitch embedding situation where people are doing that. So like these,
I have heard bits and pieces, and I've heard accusations. I've heard like a fair amount of stuff. I don't know enough about it to comment on it, like, you know, like on a real level.
Yeah, same. I don't really know what's going on behind the scenes, but I think, like, I've talked to someone who's like, yeah, you know, you kind of have to like do that type of stuff. But there's like money. I think there's transactions going on between streamers and website creators just so they can like embed their stream on the page. So you'll see this with Goon Tracker websites like EFT Ammo stat sites. And it's just like, in my opinion, I stay away from that stuff because not only you have to pay for it because they're promoting, they're basically like falsifying your viewership. But it's also just like disingenuous to yourself. And that's something I've never wanted.
And plus, it's just, I don't even like looking at the viewer number. I know a lot of people who like stare at it. And then I know a lot of people who like completely block that number off because they just don't want to know, because they don't want that number to affect their performance. But when you're somebody who's getting these inflated numbers, like let's say you pay for bots, or let's say you are embedding to a degree where it's noticeable and you get a big number there, like how can you take any number to heart when you know it's falsified. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, if you're paying for 50 viewers and you have 65 or 75 and you're like on the cusp of partner viewership, but you know more than half of those are fraudulent. Like, how can you take pride in that?
Yeah, 100%. I think that's kind of like what I think of people that are just cheating in video games, where you're just kind of cheating yourself out of the satisfaction of the experience, which is just a waste of time. You gain nothing. Yeah,
I try to think about the cheating aspect a lot, and I can't tell if it's just a means to an end where they just want to say they got Kappa or they got some achievement, whether it be, you know, fucking killing all the bosses or killing the goons in one raid or whatever achievement, meeting Lightkeeper. If it's just something they want to flex, because like, how can you take satisfaction in that? Or is it just that, just so they can say they did that and show people it? Or do they even show people it? Like, I don't understand where the satisfaction is coming at, as opposed to just ruining somebody's day and being a troll. Be like, oh, I killed that dude who had that quest item because I had walls and I could see what was in his bag. Like,
yeah,
I want to know where that comes from. But every single person who, because I put it out there that I want to interview a cheater, but nobody's been willing to, like, you know, put their name to the face to the to the tag of cheater. So it's like they want to hide it to a degree, but they want to flex it at the same time. It's very strange.
Yeah. For example, like I played in Rust groups that were super, super overly competitive, and almost all of them end up like, they end up switching to a game like Tarkov and cheating or selling cheats or something. I just have to full on block them after like being fine with them for years. But so, from what I get, it's like these people, they have like ego problems. A lot of it stems from like ego. They want to show off to their friends that they have some cool items or like they got tracksuit. Like, but really, who cares? You know, like you just mature out of that, where you just like, it, you know, all your items are going to wipe in 6 months, 100% certainty. So it doesn't matter. Like anyone with a brain, it's just, why do that?
I wonder if a lot of this has to do with stressors, because, okay, let's say you were a big Tarkov streamer and then new stuff has come out, new playstyles have come out. You get guys like Stankrat who play the game completely different than any other WK player, and then your viewership starts to dwindle. So there's that stress of trying to maintain those numbers or maintain the level of gaming that you were at. So I wonder like how much of the cheater base is made up of people who either are in a like a gaming group where they're not living up to the rest of the group, so they want to, like, you know, be on that same level, or people who are trying to maintain the same level of clout, or people who have tried legitimately for so long and just can't get there, and they think this will get them over the top. And then, you know, the people that they gain are used to seeing that gameplay, so they're like stuck in doing that so they can, like, you know, maintain that level. I wonder how many people are like in that boat, as opposed to just 12-year-olds who want to be dicks.
Yeah. I don't know, honestly. If I had to guess, it's mostly like new players. There's definitely like a community of cheaters who probably cheat just because they're so fed up with the game and they just want to let out all their anger and stuff. But I think a lot of people just give up after a certain amount of time, because I don't think playing like that would be fun or satisfying in the long run.
How could it be? Like, how could it be satisfying?
I couldn't tell you. It just,
like, you would have to be such a jealous person to, like, or just such a mean-spirited person to be like, this game brings me no joy, so I'm going to make it as unenjoyable for as many people as possible to kill it, or, you know, for whatever means to an end, or I couldn't do XYZ in-game, so I'm going to make sure said person can't accomplish XYZ. Yeah. Like, you know, the people who are like, they spawn an objective that they know people have to do. It's like, I couldn't do this shit, so no one's going to do it. You know, things like that.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of that comes from, like, a part of that could just come from the fact that the game has gotten harder in a lot of aspects over time, and a lot more frustrating. Like, harder, like, you can kind of argue in some ways it's gotten harder, but frustrating, I'm pretty sure everyone can agree Tarkov has gotten more frustrating and difficult for the user's convenience over time. And I think a lot of that anger can get bottled up, as well as the fact that people don't see a way out as a casual player. Like I try to play and stream 20 hours a week at this point, 4 hours a day, 5 days a week. Cause I'm in school right now. So it's just very difficult. Like it's kind of difficult for me even to get end game stuff, but I can imagine it's impossible for people who have 3 to 5 to 10 hours to play a week. I mean, they don't have the experience. They don't, you know, they don't have the knowledge.
Let's say we add a stressor to that, where their hours are getting declined and then they have like bills to pay and they make X amount of money off of TikTok or YouTube. So now they have to find a way to make content that will be people want to seek out. Mm-hmm. And they just don't have the time to do it. So they manufacture it. Like I could see it from that angle too. There's a lot that goes into it. And I think as a player base, it's really easy just to lump all of them in as people who are just like, you know, pieces of shit. But I'm sure some people, I'm sure there's some good people stuck in these scenarios. Not to humanize cheaters or anything, but I am sure there's some actual reasons why people do this that the common person could understand. But it's just so annoying at the same time. It's just like, this is a lot of people's de-stressors. Like this is what people do to unwind, like we talked about. And now you get people who are actively ruining said experience for whatever reason. It could be so many different things. So changing gears a little bit. So you've made a lot of different content over the years. You've made, you know, 360 snipe videos to like current day. The last one that you put out on TikTok, I mean, sorry, on Twitter was, or X, whatever the fuck you want to call it, was that STEM educational video. Now, what do you find gets better viewership? Would you say it's educational stuff? Would you say it's like the crack gameplay stuff? Or are they kind of in the same ballpark?
That's a great question, actually. I've been thinking about this a lot the last couple of weeks. Like in February, I was kind of inconsistent with posting, because I was I had some IRL stuff. But essentially what I get now after seeing other content creators, I think right now knowledge is the most important thing, and guides are the best way to display that knowledge, I guess. Like, you know, you can make them very like comprehensible. And I think with the state of Tarkov as well, like you don't see crack clips being the number one thing in Tarkov, because you know, you have ratting, which is essentially a more popular playstyle now, as it is the meta, in my opinion, at least. And I think people want to see funny moments, like ratting, just those sorts of things in terms of gameplay. But for overall viewership, I think guides is definitely the way to go. But you need to be very creative with it, because these types of guides have been around for years. So like in my most recent one, I came up with the idea to do like a tier list with sick cases. And I even sent it to my friend. I'm like, this is a new meta right here. And then the next day I made the video, uploaded it, and it did really good. And a lot of people, they kind of thought it was just a flex, but I thought, you know, what better item to name? I have like six of these cases that I just can rename afterwards. And I looked at the tier list generators online, and I don't want to have to import my own image for every single stim. And it's just easy to do it in game when you think about it, because it's just like grid system.
And nobody else is like doing that.
Yeah. And so
you found a way to make content easier to make and unique, all in the same parameter, whereas everybody else who's making the same type of stuff has to utilize like three different things to get to your end result.
Yeah, you definitely need to be creative when coming up with content and just figuring out like what can make an audience want to stay. You know, there's definitely a lot of engineering behind it,
which is crazy when you think about it, because like games like Tarkov give us a very nice blank canvas, because one, every raid is different. Like, yeah, you'll have similar situations. But every raid, the loot tables are different, unless it's like a hard spawn item. Like bosses players that are coming in, they all create different things because everyone's got a little different approach with how they hit a map. So there's like very few raids that feel exactly the same. So you have that as a blank canvas. You have the grid system, the hideout, all sorts of things that are very green screenable. A lot of things that are very content hackable. Like it's so cool how Tarkov can have like, and with the introduction of VoIP, it just makes it even more wide. Such a blank canvas for content. And it's so funny how like the game's been out for a long time in the beta, but like it feels like that a lot of this stuff has still been unscratched. Like you just found something.
Yeah, there's, I mean, that's what I like about Tarkov is it's such an in-depth game and there's so much diversity between every single raid being different players, different spawns, or I guess not different spawns, but different players, different items. You know, it's just like, and everything comes together, you know, the stash, the hideout, that's what makes the game have such a long like half-life for everyone. Like you can just put in, you know, I have almost 10,000 hours and I still enjoy the interactions I have in raid as long as I'm not getting shot by a bush, you know. But
and you're still getting excited by the loot that you're pulling, like when you find a Letix in raid or you find a fucking that one last sample you need for samples, like in your scav loot case, you still get that thrill. So my question to you is, if you ever get to the point where you stop feeling that thrill, are you still gonna play the game?
Well, I don't think I will stop feeling that thrill because it's kind of what you make of it, you know. Like it's not just going to disappear one day, but obviously over time it goes down, you know. Like getting a LEDX right now wouldn't feel as good as getting a LEDX 5 years ago,
right,
for example.
So the reason I bring that up is because for the people who make content mostly around one game, for those people who don't diversify, which you don't have the problem because you've diversified, you're kind of variety stream, you play other games on stream, but the people that only play Tarkov, when it becomes something where it's like an occupation, like I've seen people who off camera tell me, be like, look, like I play this game and now I'm stuck playing this game because this is what my entire viewership is around, and I'm afraid to change because I want to keep that viewership. I have these bills to pay. I'm locked in, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So like you get those people where Tarkov becomes that job and they're like stuck to play it as opposed to being in that mindset of like, I'm choosing to play this for fun as opposed to I have to play this for a job. Like that kind of eats away at them. So that's why I always ask that, because I know some people who are stuck, or they feel stuck, I should say. They're not stuck. They could probably move to another game and be just as successful because they are very personable people. But, you know, they feel like they're stuck. It's probably a better way to say that. And I was just wondering how you would feel in that scenario without saying
it. If I was stuck in that scenario, I would... Like, you're just going to need to change games at that point. I think you either change games or find something that you like. You know, streaming shouldn't be something where you're absolutely like miserable and you can't go a single day without it affecting you badly. But at the same time, I think a lot of streamers do feel that, and they kind of feel trapped. And it definitely sucks. Like, I think every streamer has felt that in some way. Even myself a little bit with Tarkov, because I used to diversify, but honestly, like I've pretty much only played Tarkov last year, a little bit of COD here and there. But if it really came down to it, I would change games, but I just like, I like being able to post content on Tarkov and kind of just master one thing instead of trying to go super diverse. Because if I played, you know, if I play another game, I'm going to be terrible at it, honestly. Like, it's hard to transfer skills to different games, especially like Tarkov. You can have thousands of hours in Counter-Strike and then play Tarkov and be completely terrible. For example, like Tarkov, you know, you can come out of other games and it's not that hard, but I think Tarkov after a long break especially can even be difficult to get back into, because a lot of it comes down to like a mental game of confidence and what you're trying to get out of an interaction.
So you've been playing games since you were and making content since you were around 12. So yeah. You've been playing games for over a third of your life right now. So this would be kind of a, I'm curious how you're going to answer this next one. How would you say content creation has changed your relationship with gaming? But for you, it seems like gaming and content creation were kind of at the same time period, like kind of synonymous. So I'm curious how your relationship with gaming has changed due to content creation. Or is that even noticeable? That's a
great question. I will say it kind of in some regards, it kind of ruined gaming for me because it does, you know, like I don't really have time to play outside of streaming. Like I kind of just have the time allotted to streaming, and then I'm still a full-time student. So I have to kind of like split up my time, and there's not a lot of time I can get to play other games or just be at a mental state where I kind of like want to be online and working in other games. A lot of the time I just want to relax. Like a lot of the time that I spend in my free time is just watching YouTube videos, scrolling, you know, studying, absolutely. Of course, and everything school related that
it's
I do.
It's unwinding because I'm sure schooling is taxing. What are you going to school for if you're willing to disclose?
I'm doing computer science. So, okay.
That's even more burning out because you're sitting in front of a computer doing stuff for your classes. And then you're sitting in front of a computer for gaming. So
exactly.
My question to you is like, they're saying that sitting is the new smoking. They're saying that it has a lot of negative health effects to be sitting for long periods of time. So for somebody who's a young person who doesn't have like crazy back pain, at least I hope not, or anything like that, like, do you find yourself sitting for those periods of time without having to take breaks? Do you stretch? Do you have an ergo desk? Like, how do you try to combat the long times of sitting, or do you not?
So what I do, honestly, I don't have any problem with sitting. I have problems with standing, if anything.
Okay.
Like, so I feel most comfortable sitting and laying down, but because I'm so used to it, right?
Right.
But I also, what I've been doing for the last couple like months and on and off is I try to go to the gym regularly multiple times a week and do weightlifting or cardio, just anything to get me moving and definitely get some of that negative Tarkov energy out, you know?
You gotta sweat that Tarkov energy out.
It's like a reset, just like selling those items between raids, getting that hopium from selling all the bitcoins you make from the farm this wipe. 900K, baby. Let's go.
Right. So we've talked a little bit about the streamer mentality and things like that, especially when you're starting out and especially when you don't have a lot of time. So my question to you is, what is the thing that you do to try to reset mentally from being so socially available? Like, you know, you're dealing with chat, you're having to put on like a show because you're literally a TV show only on the computer, and that's very draining. You have to be entertaining, you have to keep up with chat, you have to talk to people, you have to do all that stuff. So my question to you is, how do you mentally reset from that? And how do you go into a stream on days where you're just not kind of feeling it? Or do you not stream on those days? Like, how do you go about that?
Well, I've kind of gotten to a point where it's like embedded in my schedule where if I miss a stream, I feel like shit. So yeah, I feel worse if I miss a stream. So I try to stream and have a good time, obviously. But to reset, honestly, I just like after stream, I just take like an hour break and just kind of sit on my phone or kind of distract myself, watch some funny videos or just, I don't know, just pretty much do anything. Sometimes it's like having a nice meal, dinner with the family or, you know, doing some homework.
When you have a bad stream, do you beat yourself up about it? Like, do you go like hours later? Do you think about it? Be like, man, I fucked that up, or I should have said this, or why wasn't I like that? Or do you play that what if game with yourself, or does your brain play that what if game with you? I should say.
Yeah, it kind of depends. Like a lot of my streams, honestly, like my bad streams, just revolve around my interactions in Tarkov at this point, which is kind of a bad mentality because you can never. There's, you know, I would say there's less consistency than ever with surviving in the game. So I try to I try to not beat myself up about it. I try to move on. Sometimes it can be hard because you'll just be like thinking about it or whatever. But just realize like tomorrow's going to come. And it's always like once you sleep and wake up the next day, it's just a whole reset. Like you won't even think about it. You know, you just move on. It's in the past.
Absolutely fair. So when it comes to streaming and things like that, what is your routine? Do you do like the same thing every single day before you stream? Do you like, I know people who are like, I have to take a shower, I have to drink coffee, I got to do X, Y, and Z. Do you have a set schedule for things you do before stream, or do you just sit down and hit go?
Yeah, I definitely have like a schedule because I try to stay on schedule, and now I'm thinking of changing it up again because a lot of it comes down to what time of day you stream. That's like a whole nother topic, but you know, since I'm on the West Coast, I kind of have to stream earlier than someone on the East Coast, you know?
Yeah.
So
because you gotta what I do get before those East Coast eyeballs.
Yeah, I try to have like a good routine where I have like night classes right now. So what I do is I wake up at like 8, take a or then I'll have breakfast at like 9, and then I'll do like a couple hours of work, whether it's like homework or whatever, and then 11:30 go to the gym. About an hour or so, come back, shower, and then eat, and then get ready for the stream at 2. And yeah, I like my schedule. I mean, it's nice. 4 hours of streaming.
So getting into my only set question for when I interview a Tarkov person, if you could hang out with any boss or trader for one day, who would it be? And on the other side of the coin, if you could beat the ever-loving fuck out of any boss or trader, who would it be and why?
That's a good question, bro. So, dude, okay, the coolest looking trader that I'd hang out with is probably Peacekeeper, because he just got those shades on, and he has that blue kind of vibe to him. And it's like he sells the good shit, you know. He's got the M4s, the HKs, he's got the MP5s, you know. Those types shit. Of things. Yeah. He doesn't and have that big trapper mustache.
English. We know he speaks English.
Yeah, we know he speaks English. So I would say him. And then what trader do I hate the most? Definitely Jaeger. I mean, his tasks are terrible, bro. I mean, I remember the game before he was a thing, and like, bro, he just has the worst tasks line in the game. He does. Like, you know, it sucks, but
I wish they would mix it up and they'd bring like Pestily back as therapist. You know, yeah, just dude. Fun to mix it up because they haven't done anything like that in a while. Like, have you seen like the art, the deviant art of like all of the bosses as female characters? Like, how fun would that be if like they were just all females for like one wipe and they didn't tell anyone like
that? That would be so fun, dude. Yeah, they should definitely add some changes like that, or even. What I've come up with, I think a lot of people have said this actually, but just having different clothing you can put on that resembles the bosses. So you have the Killa tracksuit. Where's the Sturman puffer jacket? Where's the, you know, like what if you could wear like Tagilla's like a bodysuit of his tattoos or something, or Rishala's like red, his red whatever.
I want Bird Eye's like, drug rug. That's what I want. I want Bird Eye's sweater.
Yes, dude. Like they definitely need to do some stuff with clothing. And I think with microtransactions, like they're a couple steps away from making a lot of money, a lot of easy money right now. Like they already have the clothing in game. Like they,
right.
You know, it's already on a boss. It can't be that hard to put on a PMC.
So next question for you. We're getting close to our time constraint. So we're getting into the things I usually like to end the episode with. If you could give anybody getting into the scene of content creation, whether it be streaming, video making, shorts, whatever, someone who's getting into that scene, what is the best piece of advice that you could give them?
Best piece of advice is just maintaining, I think, a good, like, how do I say this? I mean, just a really good attitude toward the stream and have a personality that people can almost attach themselves to, where they feel like they need to be there every stream. And you know, you also, it's not just a Twitch stream, you also have to use like platforms for growth as well, like other social medias, YouTube, TikTok. I think YouTube is probably the best, doing like some middle, like, I don't know, 10 to 20 minute guide videos that are in depth, or some funny gameplay. Like, there's a lot of timing that comes down, and a lot of luck, like with Stankrat's situation. You almost think these people are industry plants, the way he started streaming like a couple weeks after Inertia came out, and was just so consistent. His name and his personality was just all based around a playstyle in Tarkov that was pretty much non-existent before. And, you know, he's doing great for himself. I mean, people love his content. He's hilarious. Like, I think he's a very good character.
With like the green screen, him in a cartoon rat hole doing the fucking gritty, like all this
shit. Yeah, there's so much. It all comes together, and it's kind of similar to how Landmark came up, because he wasn't even like, you know, he wasn't even a streamer when I started playing for years. And right. 1 year he started streaming consistently, and then you had COVID happen and everything. Just like an entire year, he went from 50 average viewers all the way to like 5,000. And he was like a chat.
As the pandemic was, it was a godsend for content creators.
Mm-hmm.
It really brought a lot of different eyeballs and a lot of different people to the medium that normally weren't there, which is kind of crazy to think about. So if you could do a project, whether it be a charity event, a co-stream, you name it, with any other content creator, either current or not current, like let's say they don't do this anymore, who would it be and why?
Any content creator?
Any content creator. You want to pull from like old school, like Stone Mountain 64 days, feel free. You want to pull from current day, feel free. Any content creator, choice is yours. And you can say multiple people if you want to.
Yeah, it's hard to come up with one, because there's so many like cool people that it would be fun to collab with. I think just even outside of Tarkov, like honestly, right. I think Jinxie would be like, Jinxie is just a very good, like, a lot of these,
that dude's like,
really
up right now.
A lot of these one. Really, yeah, exactly. Like a lot of these really fast growing content creators are just like super hilarious and out of pocket, like him, Queso. But for Tarkov, like, who would I want to play with? I feel like a lot of people who've been around for a long time. I mean, like Landmark, he doesn't really do streams with other people. Like, there's so many chads that would be fun to play with. I think Trey, 24K, Dill Hero.
And Chase recently won the solo evasion competition.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that. That's, I mean, he's a very good player. Like, he's won. He's killed me in these tournaments before, and he's one of the best players, especially now. I feel like in the current day of Tarkov, he's very good, and he's humble, and he doesn't even like he goes through many phases where he'll take breaks from Tarkov. Like, he was streaming DayZ, he was streaming other games, and he was still just like having a great time and coming back to Tarkov better than ever.
So, from somebody who competes competitively and someone who plays the game at a higher echelon, would you want to be part of a gaming org like Evasion or a FaZe Clan if FaZe Clan decided they wanted to dip a toe into Tarkov? Is that something that you would be interested in, being how you had kind of a background in liking said orgs?
Yeah. Competitively, like, honestly, back in the day, 100%. But now with the way things are, it's a little different. You know, it'd definitely be some negotiation going on, seeing like it depends, because I don't really see Tarkov being super competitive with Arena until the right changes are made.
Right.
But right. Like,
well, I meant for like evasion tournaments, like, would you want to be part of like that squad and compete at that level? Or like if Arena was a thing, like if you could compete in either one, which one would it be, like regular game or Arena, if you could pick?
I don't know. It's hard to choose, but right now I'd say the regular game, because I mean, it's kind of hard to do tournaments on the regular game because they have to have private accounts, all right, with like pre-set up with skill level. And one of the problems with Arena right now, honestly, that a lot of people don't talk about is just like skill leveling. Like for me, you know, I was like, I don't know if it levels differently than the base game, but the base game is now leveling slower than ever with like strength and endurance. Like I'm not even max skills yet or even close. So I think skills are a big part of Arena, or like what they're going to do with the movement in Arena, because having level zero strength compared to max strength is a completely different game.
Yeah.
It's insane. So I like competing. Like when I was doing the tournaments on the main game with Hunt Premier and Evasion, which I wasn't able to play in the most recent one, but I applied for one of the newer Hunt Premier tournaments. But honestly, I had a great time. Like I don't think Arena could beat the fun in just like queuing in for 3 hours and playing against all legitimate players, having, you know, interactions where, you know, no one's cheating and there's no BS going on. It's just everyone having a good time trying to manage their rubles in these like these styles of tournaments. And I think it's fun in the main game right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Main game is it's constantly evolving, most of the time for the better. And it's just nice that they're trying stuff, like with the recoil changes being the most recent thing I can think of. A lot of people love it. Heard some people not like it, saying it's more like COD than ever. So what is your take on the current recoil?
I like the current recoil a lot. That's like that's one of the better things, I think. But with the new recoil comes the new hip fire, which is very bad now, and a lot of people are complaining about it. I think it is a little bit overtuned now with how much they nerfed it. And I also think the recoil is, again, almost too much like COD. It just seems like a lot of these new systems that BSG implements, it'd be better if they met us in the middle with the waste system, with inertia. If they kind of didn't make the guns shoot as straight, but they also didn't nerf the hip fire into the ground. So, but overall, I definitely like the changes, because it, like, I don't know, something about the old meta with just like brain dead hip firing, and you know, you actually have to aim your character now. Like, it's not just RNG. If you have better aim, you're going to win. Sure, rats are going to be able to kill you easier, but you know, everyone's at the same advantage and disadvantage.
Which is, yeah, it's got its good things. It's got its not so good things. It's, yeah, it's funny how Tarkov, like we were saying earlier, when they implement something, they tend to over tweak it. And then it's just walking it back slowly, which is almost better than under tweaking it and having to ramp it up. So that way people are already used to it one way and it becomes a little easier. So,
yeah, exactly. You know,
hoping things work better for the next wipe. Fuck, I'm hoping games still exist in the next wipe, looking at the financial report and some of the things that I have heard. But, you know, it's all hearsay. Nothing's very verified. Nothing's concrete yet. So one of those things. So last question for you, Zach. Who in the Tarkov space, if you were to go to a TwitchCon, who in the space currently would you like to meet in person if given the opportunity? And why?
Man, at a TwitchCon. Oh, there's so many cool people, dude. I feel like Pestilli would be fun to meet, because like he I knew about his channel when he was like small, like a couple thousand subs, making shoreline farming videos. Just like a lot of people who have been in the space for a really long time. You know, him, Landmark, obviously. Stankrat would be pretty fun to meet. I feel like he's a cool guy.
Right.
But oh man, there's so many cool people. And eventually I do want to go to a TwitchCon, because I think it's just very good to network and meet people. And like the last one, they had so many cool events. Like, you know, people were riding in tanks and stuff. They had a shooting range. Like, I don't know if I'd get invited to all that stuff, but dude, it looks like a great time, you know?
It's the cool thing about Vegas is they open that up. But this next one's in San Diego. And I think it's in October or November or September, some shit like that. I don't remember the date exactly off the top of my head. So it's just around the corner. So you said you wish when you go. So are you planning on going to this next one or no? Is it not in the cards?
I don't know when it is exactly. I mean, maybe it could be in the cards. Like I was considering going to the last one, But it always, like, because I'm still in school. Like,
that's
it was, the last hiccup. Time. Yeah, that's last time it was like midterm week or something, and I had to study for an exam or something. And I was like, damn.
Right.
But I don't know. And also, I wasn't going to be 21 at the last one. So,
what's the point of going to Vegas? You're not going to be 21, you know?
Exactly. Like, so,
especially because a lot of these Tarkov events tend to start at the bar, like bar up, bar crawl. Yeah. That's the one they did in San Diego like a little while ago. So, yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. Like, if there's people that go, like, I know finding a housing while, at least in Vegas during that, was super difficult. Like,
oh, I'm sure it was expensive as fuck too. Yeah. I'm sure those people knew and they were like jacking up.
Yeah, I know. It's BS, but I don't know. We'll see, honestly. Like when it gets closer to the date.
We'll play it by ear. We'll see.
Exactly.
So Zach, now is your time to say whatever it is you would like to say, whether it is to promote the stream, talk about an event you have coming up, to thank your moderators, to thank your chat. Now's your time to say whatever it is you would like to say. The floor is yours.
Sure. Yeah. So I want to thank my community in the chat, the moderators, because I owe them, you know. They're always there.
And mods are doing work for free, you know. They're like they're there because they believe and like you, which is so fucking cool and humbling in so many ways. It's like
it really motivates. I want to thank Tarkov for just being a thing. Great game.
Yeah.
Lot of awesome people. I will say the Tarkov community, like all the way from when I started almost 6 years ago until now, has been like by far the reason I stuck with Tarkov over Rust for sure was just the community is so much better than any other gaming community that I know of,
right?
That I've been a part of, and I think that really what makes me stay and believe in this game and just the future for it. Like, I don't think Tarkov's going anywhere. You see a lot of these survival games, Rust, DayZ, they've been around for almost a decade now. Tarkov, same thing. Like, it's not going anywhere. If anything, it's going to be growing. And
it's a threat because major studios put out their answer to it. Remember DMZ being the Tarkov killer?
Oh, yeah.
Remember when they tried and they failed at it?
Yeah, so, they were super, super about that. I don't see any games that can come out in this genre to, like, replace Tarkov because it's hard. Being one of these like survival shooters, a lot of these games really don't last very long. Like, what is it called? The Day Before or whatever?
Yeah, that lasted less than 3 days. Cycle Frontier lasted less than 2 years. There's a lot of them that just don't ever leave. They fail at launch or they just don't last, which is sad. And then you have ones that have weird legal issues like Dark and Darker, which you can't even get on Steam. You have to like torrent it to play it because it's got some legal issue with the previous game studio it belonged to. It's just weird. Yeah, it's been replicated but never exceeded, which is cool for it. And I think it's really easy to forget how, like, people forget how lucky they are to be in a community like a Tarkov. Because, like, is the studio very communicative? Do they usually tell us things? No, they're not very good at communication, but they put out a really good product. And there are people who've built entire careers and livelihoods off of a game that only cost them $130, $160 if they bought the fucking DLC, like, you know, loot expansion. Like, how many careers can you really build off of one tool that cost $200?
Exactly.
And that's if you went the extended route. So
yeah,
I think it's really easy to get spoiled by that and forget that. So that's why I think it's kind of funny when you see the people who are like big in the scene who owe a lot of their success to a game and they just seem to only talk shit about it. It's like, do you forget where you came from? Like, you should be
Tarkov is like, you know, $200 and it's got me 6 years of entertainment. Like, you couldn't ask for more, dude. Like,
yeah, if you take Tarkov and the amount you spent on it and then you just do simple math, Like you look at your hours in game and you divide that by 60 to, and then you find out how much money you've spent per minute of gameplay. And it's just like, oh, for an hour of gameplay, I've spent 7 like cents or whatever the fuck. And then you look at your Steam library and all the other games you played like 20 hours, never touched again. That cost you $60.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way I like to think about games. It's just like how much value are you getting per hour, per minute played? And it's just you want to make sure. I don't like any of the live service games with the microtransactions and all that. It just becomes a nightmare. Like it, I don't know, the gaming industry, but Tarkov is always there. You know, they did start dabbling in the microtransactions, but as long as they're not doing like, you know, unicorns on our guns and shit, then
they're going to do the, like, oh, you don't want to do this task? $5. You don't want to do Sugarboard Nevin? $10.
They'd make so much. Don't give them any ideas, you know?
Exactly. Well, anyway, Zach, I would like to take this opportunity. Thank you for taking your time out of your busy Sunday to talk to a complete fucking stranger about gaming and the gaming scene. Always a pleasure when people take that risk and that jump to talk to a complete person they do not know, because we don't have any interaction other than this. This was our first DM.
Exactly, dude. I mean, hey, I like talking to strangers. There's a lot of stuff you can learn.
Right. And if you also like talking to strangers, come back to Castle Comms. Next time we'll have episode 113. I don't know who the guest is yet, but you know what? Why don't you go outside and smoke and or touch some grass, and we'll see you next time on the comms.